At age 64, Madison poet and novelist Jessie Lee Kercheval did something she had never done before. She picked up some colored pencils and paper and started to draw every day.
It was 2020. The world was in pandemic lockdown, and Kercheval, then living in Uruguay, wanted to do something that would get her off her screens.
She had always been a prolific writer, but never imagined she could express herself through drawing.
I thought there was a door that I went through that says, this girl is going to write and not draw when I was young and not do music and not, I don't know, do math. We just define ourselves, but life is long.
Anne Kercheval has kept trying new things. In 2024, her debut graphic memoir, French Girl, was named one of the 10 best graphic novels of the year by the Washington Post.
And now Kercheval has her first solo show featuring dozens of pastel works at the Edgewood University Gallery in Madison. The exhibition is called Drawn Lives. We spoke at the gallery surrounded by her art, where I asked if her younger self would believe this is her show.
No, not only my younger self, myself of like 4 years ago would be astounded. Actually, myself about a year ago would be astounded to see it, to have an actual show of my work, because I didn't start drawing, as you mentioned, until I was like 64 during the pandemic. I love art, and I love art museums and art galleries. I've always haunted them, and to see my work up on those walls, and so beautifully selected and arranged by David Wells, the director of the gallery and curator of the show, it's just, I don't know if I've ever been happier, although I have to say something like, oh, except for, you know, marriage, birth of children.
Can you walk us through your process with pastels and what you create?
Well, the first thing is, I always think the word pastel, before I drew in pastels, I had the wrong idea about them, too. We think of them as pastel, as in I'm wearing a faintly pink dress for Easter. So these are brilliantly colored. People would think they were chalks, but they're pure pigment, really. And so the very long tradition from the Renaissance on. And so I moved from originally drawing in some colored pencils when I started during the pandemic 4 years ago to wanting more color and moving to the pastels. So usually what I do is I draw first with a pencil or a pen, and then I sort of attack it with pastels. And sometimes they're very neat little lines with pastels, and sometimes I get very smeary and smear them all over the place and blend them together, which they do wonderfully, and get completely filthy. But the main thing I love about them is they're just super vivid colors.
Do the images come first, or do the words? How do you incorporate the words?
Well, because I've been a writer for my entire life, really, and the word part of my brain is overdeveloped. And so if I start with the words, it comes out very badly. I have a problem I think of as the apple-apple problem. In other words, I think apple and I draw apple, and you're not really supposed to do that except in, you know, alphabet books for children. And so I have to draw first. And I usually am just drawing all the time. I started during the pandemic of just before I had any idea of doing anything with anything, trying to draw one piece a day. My rule was I had to draw it. I couldn't tear it up. I had to finish it. And I had to take a picture of it and post it on Facebook because that's what we were all doing during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And everyone was very kind. And after I have a series of drawings, sometimes a story starts to come to me. So it's sort of percolating on something like my sister just died after being in hospice. And that was, a lot of the pieces in the new book are about that. And so I'm thinking about something from my childhood. I'm drawing images from my childhood. Then a story will start to form, and I'll almost sort of sketch out like a script to myself of what words might go on each image. And then I might draw what I think of as sort of a bespoke image, you know, like I need one of my sister as a child here, or I need one of something. So then I might draw sort of more intentionally, but I really have to draw first. For example, in an art class I took once, well, everyone else was an artist, and this is an online class, and the teacher said, well, let's take like, an hour and write a few lines. And I was thinking, don't give me an hour to write a few lines. I'll write a novel in an hour. And so I have to work the other way around.
Yeah, you could work those lines out in a few seconds or so.
Yeah, that's the part of my brain that works well.
You mentioned your sister's ill health that worsened, and the series of drawings with you in black and then ending in color. Can you talk about why color is so meaningful to you?
Yes, it really mixes in with a lot of things, with my sister and with drawing. I felt that as an academic professional and as a writer, you know, black is the house color of academics and writers. And I remember saying to a friend quite recently, really, that we were looking at a store and I said, there was nothing here for me. I only wear black. And now she laughs at me because I would never wear black. I'm wearing brilliant colors. And part of it was just discovering the color as I drew. Part of it was remembering my sister wearing bright colors and not me. And so there's a piece that's going to be in the new book that's called Pink. And it's about me dressing in all black and then thinking about my sister and how ill my sister is, and then saying I want to go to bed in a nightgown as brilliant as the sun. Mm. You know, the idea that we only have a short time to live, and I just really want to embrace color.
Mm. In portraiture, drawing someone's face and capturing their unique identity and capturing their mood, that can be really intimidating. Can you describe a face from your exhibition that you're drawn to and how you went about capturing it?
You know, I got some practice, again, starting during the pandemic, we were all on Zoom all the time, and I could sketch everyone that was in their Zoom box, and they couldn't tell, and they didn't have their masks on or anything. So I really started doing that, and still carry around a little notepad where I'll sit in a meeting or a reading or something and try to see people's faces and draw them small. But when I'm drawing someone I know, like my sister, that's really just, I might look at a picture that I have of them, a photo of them young, but I really just go for the feeling of it. Sometimes I just draw people who are quite imaginary. I love the big nose.
Why is that?
I don't know. To me, it's the strongest, most sort of character-driven of part of someone's face. I was at the Uffizi in Florence and just sort of came back with my head full of, you know, great Italian noses. So, you know, I don't actually do the sort of portraiture where like a small child is put in a chair across the room from me and I have to draw them for their mom. I'm sort of using my inner eye.
You say that with a pencil in hand, your brain lit up. Does it make a difference for you to abandon a keyboard and screen in order to create?
Yes, it makes things come alive again. It's kind of parallel with me learning Spanish. I thought that when I first, it was quite random. I ended up taking Spanish lessons in Mexico because my daughter wanted to learn Spanish. And I was in the class learning my numbers and colors. And I suddenly learned verde. And I was thinking, it's so green, like I'd worn out green. And I felt the same way when I drew again. It's like, for example, I'm drawing my memories. I have written a lot of poems that are based on my life. I have written a graphic memoir, an all-word memoir called Space, you know, that's 300 pages of words about my life. But when I'm drawing, I pull out memories that I never turned into words. They're not the funny story you told about your dog or the tragic story you told about a car accident. They're something you literally remember without ever having turned it into words. And so when I draw, those colors and those shapes just come out in a different way than they do with words.
How does your art now inform you as a writer? Have you changed as a writer?
I always think it's interesting the way things influence each other. I think it has, but mostly what I'm now is just so enmeshed in the idea of combining images and words that I haven't really gone back so much to think about how it's affected my all-word production, although I have written things that are, you know, that are all words since I began to draw. Like I did some essays that just have some drawings dropped into them. Then there's these pieces that have just a little bit of text on them.
A tiny bit of text.
A tiny bit of text.
And like you have to pare way down.
Way down, because you can't put very much on there or it obliterates the drawing. And I was delighted that a couple times in my last book and several times in this new book, there's actually a page that I think carries the story with no words at all, which I was like so happy about, because the image does all of the work. And you never really want the words and the drawing to do the same thing. Again, it's that apple-apple thing. The drawing should be doing something the words don't, and vice versa.
One of your pastels is titled, I Was Alone on the Frozen Lake. And it's this woman skating on a frozen lake, and it's about Wisconsin. Can you describe it and what feelings come up in this place?
That's almost a dreamlike one because, again, you know, I live right by Lake Monona in Madison, and I've walked on it many times and ice skated on it a bit. I have to say, as a person who grew up in Florida, I'm not a great ice skater. But during the pandemic, I would walk on it a lot. I would walk through all the way down the lake and then back through my neighborhood. And I was just struck by this special space that's not there in the summer. It's like, you know, it's like Jesus walking on the water. And so that piece is just about the isolation and silence and magic of being on the frozen lake. And then something in that piece happens where you sort of fall through time and you're back in time with people. Which it's interesting, with drawing and with graphic novels, graphic memoirs, no one gives you trouble about that. I think if you wrote a memoir piece and you said, suddenly I was walking in the lake and then people all around me were dressed like the 1890s, they'd say, okay, what kind of fantasy novel is this? And this is certainly not a memoir. But again, drawing makes it like we're all accessing our dreams and it just feels real, even though it isn't actually real.
How do you think your art would look if you had started much earlier in life, started drawing instead of in your 60s?
Well, I think if I had trained as an artist, there would be things I could do. I also think there would be things that I'd be frightened of doing. So one of the things about learning to draw has taught me that I have a lot of rules that I learned as a writer and probably passed on to generations of my students as a creative writing teacher at the University of Wisconsin. But now I want to go back and say, forget that. There are not really any rules. I shouldn't have told you that. You know, you don't have to stay in one point of view. You don't have to change tenses in this particular way. Just go crazy. And so that's sort of what I feel. I benefit from not having the training as much as I suffer from not having the training, sort of 50-50.
Well, Jessie Lee Kercheval, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's been a delight.
That is Jessie Lee Kercheval, a poet, translator, and author of more than 20 books and story collections. She is an emeritus professor of English at UW-Madison. We spoke at the Edgewood University Gallery, where Kercheval's first solo exhibition called Drawn Lives is on display until October 2nd. An opening reception is set for September 3rd. Thanks to Sarah Hopewell for field production on this interview.